The void, shunyata, among the four fundamental Buddhist notions, the three others being impermanence, interdependence, and suffering, is certainly the most mysterious and hard to grasp. What is this immense edifice of experience and thought that in the end only opens up on an absence of substance? What would be the foundation of that edifice and of the mind that built it? If the void is the only reality that isn't illusory, who escapes the net of all Maya? Who has cast this net? Can one live over a dizzying void? Can we imagine a dream without a dreamer? The void is a scientific notion. We are empty. The matter that composes us is, so to speak, empty. An issue which is very dear to my vision of the future is global demilitarization. This may sound idealistic to many people. I am aware that implementing it requires a step-by-step approach that will entail a process of rethinking in policy and public education. The first step toward this goal is an international ban on the arms trade and an expansion of demilitarized zones in all parts of the world. Recent progress on dismantling nuclear arsenals and nuclear test bans represent an encouraging and significant beginning. A small child has to grow up into a well-built young man or woman, but the growth takes place with the passage of time. It cannot happen overnight. Likewise, the transformation of mind will also take time. Nowadays, in many places, by using certain injections, pigs, cows, and birds suddenly grow. Then they are killed and consumed. This negative practice also has an effect on human beings. So, when we talk of spiritual practice, we cannot inject certain qualities and suddenly transform the mind. In the beginning of Buddhist practice, our ability to serve others is limited. The emphasis is on healing ourselves, transforming our minds and hearts. But as we continue, we become stronger and increasingly able to serve others. But until then, we may get overwhelmed by the sufferings and difficulties of other people. We may become exhausted and not able to serve others, not to mention ourselves effectively. It is natural to feel some limitation with both, and we just have to accept that. There is no possibility of happiness and peace while someone is under the leadership of a very negative person. Therefore, reflect upon the fact that you are under the rule of ignorance. Ignorance is like a despotic king, and anger and attachment are like his ministers. We live under the tyranny and influence of ignorance, the self-grasping attitude, and also the self-cherishing attitude, factors that all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas treat as real enemies. There are different types of patience. The patience of being indifferent to the harm inflicted by others, the patience of voluntarily accepting hardship, and the patience developed through the reasoned conviction in the Dharma. Only a spontaneous feeling of empathy with others can really inspire us to act on their behalf. Nevertheless, compassion does not arise mechanically. Such a sincere feeling must grow gradually, cultivated within each individual based on their own conviction of its worth. Adopting a kind attitude thus becomes a personal matter. How each of us behaves in daily life is, after all, the real test of compassion. I feel there is a difference between the mental conflicts that one feels and the emotions they give rise to: anger, hostility, and so forth. If you are not able to express the mental conflicts that you have, then at a later point of your life, when you are able to express these mental conflicts, they are automatically accompanied by hostility and anger. Therefore, it is important to express one's suffering, not so much the hostility, but rather the suffering. If any sensible person thinks deeply, he will respect justice. There is an inborn appreciation and respect for justice within our human body. In children, we find what is natural to the human character. But as children grow up, they develop a lot of conditioning and wrong attitudes. I often feel there is more truthfulness in a small child, and I find many reasons to have confidence in human courage and human nature. As a spiritual trainee, you must be prepared to endure the hardships involved in a genuine spiritual pursuit and be determined to sustain your effort and will. You must anticipate the multiple obstacles that you are bound to encounter along the path and understand that the key to a successful practice is never to lose your determination. Such a resolute approach is very important. The story of the Buddha's personal life is the story of someone who attained full enlightenment through hard work and unwavering dedication. If people everywhere are not allowed to strive for the happiness they instinctively want, then they will be dissatisfied and will make problems for everyone. Unless we can create an atmosphere of genuine cooperation, cooperation not gained by threat or force, but by heartfelt understanding, life will become ever more difficult. If we can satisfy people at a heart level, peace will ensue. Without the basis of coexistence, if undesirable social, political, and cultural forms continue to be imposed upon people, peace becomes difficult. If there is love, there is hope to have real families, real brotherhood, real equanimity, real peace. If the love within your mind is lost, if you continue to see other beings as enemies, then no matter how much knowledge or education you have, no matter how much material progress is made, only suffering and confusion will ensue. Human beings will continue to deceive and overpower one another. Basically, everyone exists in the very nature of suffering. So to abuse or mistreat each other is futile. The foundation of all spiritual practice is love. That you practice this well is my only request. When a day seems to be long, idle gossip makes our day seem shorter. But it is one of the worst ways in which we waste our time. If a tailor just holds the needle in his hand and goes on talking to a customer, the tailoring does not get finished. Besides, the needle might prick his finger. In short, meaningless gossip prevents us from doing any kind of work. We eschew the path of mundane power, for the healing power of the Spirit naturally follows the path of the Spirit. It abides not in the stone of fine buildings, nor in the gold of images, nor in the silk from which robes are fashioned, nor even in the paper of holy writ, but in the ineffable substance of the mind and the heart of man. We are free to follow its dictates as laid down by the great teachers, to sublimate our heart's instincts and purify our thoughts. Through actual practice in his daily life, a person well fulfills the aim of all religion, whatever his denomination. Oppression has never, anywhere, succeeded in suppressing the eternal desire of people to live free, free to think their own thoughts, free to act as they consider best for the common welfare, and live as human beings, not as robots or slaves. Even if the Chinese leave nothing but ashes in our sacred land, Tibet will rise from these ashes as a free country, even if it takes a long time to do so. No imperialist power has succeeded in keeping other people in colonial subjection for long. It is most unlikely that we shall actually be able to take on the sufferings of others and give them our happiness. When such transference between beings does occur, it is the result of some very strong, unbroken karmic connection from the past.